This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Nabil Biagio sitting in for Yahya Zuhib, and here's what's coming up.
I will deliver a bold plan to cut taxes and grow our economy. I will deliver on the energy crisis, dealing with people's energy bills.
That's Liz Truss, Britain's newly named Prime Minister. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. President-elect William Ruto said he will work to deliver for the Kenyan population, speaking after the country's Supreme Court upheld his recent election win. The court unanimously dismissed claims by petitioners, including runner-up and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga, that the vote was rigged. Muhammad Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi.
President-elect William Ruto welcomed Monday's decision, pledging to serve the Kenyan people.
And we are truly, truly grateful. And I want to say to the people of Kenya and to those who have made effort to get us here that we will not let you down. We will work hard and we will not let you down.
The 7-judge court ruled that results of the August 9th presidential election were valid under the Constitution and electoral law. The judges also said they found no significant irregularities or illegalities. Chief Justice Martha Koome read the ruling on behalf of the other 6 judges. She dismissed 8 petitions challenging the outcome, including the one from former Prime Minister Raila Odinga.
The presidential election petition number E-005 of 2022, as consolidated with the presidential election petition numbers E-001, 2, 3, 4, 7, and 8 of 2022 are hereby dismissed. As a consequence, we declare the election of the first respondent as president-elect to be valid under Article 143 of the Constitution.
The court found that the Electoral Commission deployed technology that correctly identified voters, transmitted results, and was not disrupted. The court also said the polling station results were not tampered with and found that Ruto attained more than 50% of the vote, the standard required for the leading candidate to avoid a runoff. Koome said there were some problems with the election, but none that would call for the election to be invalidated.
Although the petitioners have provided numerous averments pointing to possible irregularities and illegalities marked by failure of technology, arranged voter suppression, printing and utilization of Book 2 of 2, EO preparation by the IMBC and its chairperson, commission indiscretions, transposition anomalies, agent absence, and many others, we are of the view that the pointed irregularities and irregularities were not of such magnitude as to affect the final result of the presidential election.
The IEBC is the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission. Odinga said in a statement that he will respect the court's ruling. He said, quoting here, "We have always stood for the rule of law and the constitution. In this regard, we respect the opinion of the court, although we vehemently disagree with their decision today." His running mate, Martha Karua, said on Twitter that the court had spoken, but that she disagreed with the findings. One of the lawyers representing Odinga, James Orengo, also objected to the ruling.
The rule of law should prevail. The court normally has the last word in making a statement as to what is the law of the land. But as citizens who are sovereign, we're entitled to disagree, and disagree very vehemently.
Ruto will be sworn in next week and become the fifth president of the Republic of Kenya, succeeding Uhuru Kenyatta. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Journalist Ruben Kiama spoke with Kenyans in Nairobi today after the Supreme Court ruling. Bookseller Kevin Odwar was disappointed.
Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto says he'll publish government contracts with China and deport Chinese nationals working in the country illegally. The policies are designed to appeal to citizens pummeled by mounting debt and a skyrocketing cost of living.
We will put the brakes on more borrowing. It may not come to zero, but we will begin the journey to slow down on borrowing. Because they say when you find yourself in a hole, stop digging.
Kenya, which has a 2022 to 2023 budget of just under $28 billion, has a deficit of 6.2% of GDP and owes China about $8 billion. That debt has funded an infrastructure building spree under President Uhuru Kenyatta. The contracts are not public, and some Kenyan organizations have lodged court cases to try to force full disclosure of the deals. Ruto says his is an economic platform.
But that economic platform includes public resources, which means we have to tackle corruption head on, right? And in fact, in this election, we are probably the only team that has a plan on how to fight corruption.
Ruto has painted the election as a clash between hustlers and dynasties. The hustlers are Kenya's poorest, who he has vowed to lift up. Dynasties is a jab at Odinga. This is his fifth crack at the presidency. It's also a dig at Ruto's current boss, son of Kenya's former president, Jomo Kenyatta. Uhuru Kenyatta has backed Odinga in a bid to sideline Ruto, who the president describes as unfit for office.
That was David Doyle of Reuters in a story that was produced during the election's final days. Journalist Ruben Kiama spoke with Kenyans in Nairobi today after the Supreme Court ruling. Bookseller Kevin Odwar was disappointed.
My view, according to the Supreme Court judgment, today I was a little bit shocked because things never went the way I expected. On my side, I'm an Azimio supporter, so I was expecting a favor on our side, but it never came through. But I appreciate whatever the Supreme Court have made, and we respect the judgment.
However, student Daniela Wairumu had high hopes for the new government.
I think that the verdict of today was very fair, and that was what was supposed to be done today. First of all, Kenyans should go back to work and hustle and get the money and to grow the economy. Secondly, we are expecting the government, that the incoming government, to build our country, to make our country a better nation. And from now on, we are supposed to be competing with other nations up there. We're not supposed to be down here. Kenya is supposed to go to a place that no other country has reached. I'm expecting that there is not going to be corruption from now on. I'm expecting that there is going to be change from today. I want to congratulate the president-elect. As a youth, I think that there are so many youth out here that don't have any employment right now. First of all, it should create job opportunities for us.
Another student, Sheila Melesi, who was also optimistic and happy that the immediate reaction to the ruling was peaceful.
I'm a bit disappointed, yeah. But that shouldn't put us behind. No, the past is the past. People voted, people chose. And they chose Ruto over Raila. It's okay. So I'd like to congratulate the president, Mr. President-elect, and we are looking forward to you helping us tackle the problems of unemployment, the poverty, create job opportunities. Message to my fellow Kenyans is, currently around this peace, no one is fighting each other. Keep up the good spirit. Keep up, go on working. Kenyans are, they are great people.
As you just heard, the Kenyan Supreme Court has rejected appeals to last month's presidential election and said the deputy president, William Ruto, is the country's president-elect. Ruto said after he will extend a hand of brotherhood to all competitors and their supporters. His leading rival, Raila Odinga, said on Twitter, "We respect the opinion of the court, although we vehemently disagree with their decision today." A short time ago, my colleague Esther Gutui-Eward spoke with Kenyan constitutional lawyer Charles Kanjama about the ruling.
This is going to be the second presidential transition after Kenya got a new constitution in the year 2010. The first was from President Mwai Kibaki to Uhuru Kenyatta in 2013, and this also came after a contested presidential election in which Raila Odinga, who emerged second, went to the Supreme Court and challenged the victory. The Supreme Court disagreed with his petition and Uhuru Kenyatta was sworn in. So this is the second time in which we're having a presidential transition, again after a contested election declaration. One of the most important questions that observers were waiting to see what the court would say was on the split between the election commissioners, because a majority of the election commissioners, four of them, had disagreed with their chairman who read the declaration that William Ruto was the president-elect. So what was interesting was that the court noted that the chair of the commission does not have dictatorial powers. He has to act or work with the other commissioners. But nonetheless, they also noted that the seven commissioners worked together until the tail end of the process, and they did not find any cogent evidence to challenge the declaration of results. So what happened is you had a unanimous and very resounding verdict in favor of the Elections Commission. All 8 points, issues for determination that had been raised in the seven petitions that were being considered jointly were all dismissed. And the court therefore found that William Ruto was validly elected and was properly declared president-elect. This means that in the next 8 days, on Tuesday next week, 13th of September, William Ruto will be sworn into office and take office as the fifth president of the Republic of Kenya.
So even with the disagreement with what has happened, this case is closed, right?
All the parties had indicated before that they'll respect the court's outcome. In our constitutional dispensation, the Supreme Court, which is the apex court in Kenya, its decisions are final. So the parties have affirmed that they accept in that sense, they respect the court's decision that it has brought to an end the election period in Kenya. And those who are not happy with the court's decision, they say they're exercising their democratic right to have a free opinion on whether to agree or disagree the decision, but they are upholding the fact that the court has the last word constitutionally.
That was Charles Kanjama, a constitutional lawyer in Kenya. He was speaking with Esther Githu-Eward with VOA's Africa 54 TV News program. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com.
this leadership campaign, I campaigned as a Conservative and I will govern as a Conservative. And my friends, we need to show that we will deliver over the next 2 years. I will deliver a bold plan to cut taxes and grow our economy. I will deliver on the energy crisis, dealing with people's energy bills.
That was Liz Truss speaking today just after she was named the new leader of Britain's Conservative Party and the country's Prime Minister, replacing Boris Johnson. For more on Truss and British politics, we have VOA's Henry Ridgewell in London on the line to fill us in. Welcome, Henry.
Good to be with you, Neil.
Tell us a little bit about Liz Truss and her political background.
She's a politician who's come full circle, really. Her political career began at Oxford University when she was actually a member of the Student Liberal Democrats, one of the opposition parties. She spoke then in her student days of her anti-monarchist views. She supported the legalization of cannabis. But during her time at Oxford, she switched colors. She became a member of the Conservative Party then, and she slowly worked her way up the ranks through David Cameron's government and more recently Boris Johnson's government, serving as Trade Minister and most recently as Foreign Secretary, with the role that she has fulfilled until today and indeed until tomorrow when Boris Johnson officially steps down and Liz Truss will take the keys to number 10 Downing Street and become Prime Minister.
Quite a turnaround from her early Liberal positions. What about her foreign policy? What do we know about that?
Yes, so we've had a good window on her thinking on foreign policy, given that she served as Foreign Secretary under Boris Johnson. And what we can gather is that really she will continue many of the policies that Boris Johnson instigated, but perhaps in an even more forceful and hawkish manner. Many of those who know her say that she has more of an appetite for risk than Boris Johnson. So, for example, she was at the forefront of Britain's decision to arm Ukraine very early in the lead-up to Russia's invasion of that country and has been steadfast behind that policy since then. And on the campaign trail over the summer here in Britain, she's spoken of the need to continue that support well into the future, to continue to provide weapons to Ukraine and to continue to provide money to rebuild the country and to continue to take a very hawkish stance against Russia geopolitically as well. So we can expect a continuation and indeed an intensification of Britain's support for Ukraine further down the line. She's also been very hawkish on China, perhaps more so than Boris Johnson. She was involved in Britain's decision to ban the Chinese telecoms firm Huawei from the rollout of 5G mobile technology in Britain. That was a sore point from Beijing's perspective. So she's expected to be far more hawkish against China as well.
China. And here's another one. Has she had much to say about Britain's relationship with Africa in the past?
As Trade Minister, she was involved deeply in the Brexit process. She actually supported remaining in the European Union, but then changed her mind after the vote. And during that role, she spoke extensively on her hopes of building trade relations across Africa. She spoke of the fact that 90% of GDP growth, as she put it, was outside the European Union, much of it in Africa, and wants to further build trade relations there. She said that Britain currently has 43% of the African continent covered by trade deals, and she wants to expand that. On another note, your listeners will be aware of Britain's policy of trying to send failed asylum seekers, or indeed all asylum seekers, tens of thousands of them every year, to Rwanda for processing there.
She's
been a big advocate of that policy, and she wants to extend that to other countries on the African continent as well.
Thank you very much, Henry Ridgewell, for joining us live from London. That was Henry Ridgewell joining us live from London. South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa is set to meet with U.S. President Joe Biden at the White House on September 16. A statement from Biden's office said issues to be discussed include cooperation on trade and investment infrastructure, climate and energy, and health. It also added the two leaders would discuss global challenges, which analysts say indicates Russia's war against Ukraine will be on the agenda. Darren Taylor reports.
South Africa is the continent's second largest and most industrialized economy. It's a member of the BRICS bloc of emerging economies, along with Washington's main rivals, China and Russia. South Africa is also the only African member of the G20, a group of influential countries, plus the European Union. University of Johannesburg International Relations Professor David Monier says Biden clearly recognizes South Africa's importance.
The two countries' trade is very high. South Africa is U.S. number one trading partner on the African continent, and U.S. is in the range of number three for South Africa.
The meeting between Biden and Ramaphosa will follow a visit to South Africa by U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken when Pretoria asserted its right to remain neutral in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Monier is convinced Biden won't get far should he try to persuade Ramaphosa to change tack. The analyst says African nations usually don't take sides in conflicts elsewhere.
This has absolutely nothing to do with the United States. It has to do with the position that has been taken by Western powers. For the past two decades, I think they've been bombing Iraq, they've been bombing Syria, Yemen has been bombed, Libya has been bombed in 2011. And therefore, for South Africa, I think it's just a question of standing its ground on issues of global peace and security with an aim of ensuring that there is transformation of the United Nations system itself, allowing Africa to have a much bigger say.
Monier says he'd be surprised if the Biden administration didn't understand that Russia isn't a big player in Africa, and certainly not in South Africa.
South Africa's trade with Russia, it's very small. I mean, we're talking about 4 billion plus. So it's not about money or anything. It's about principles, foreign policy, independence, and ensure that South Africa continues to play a meaningful role in bringing peace and security. And there are so many other areas where Pretoria agrees with Washington.
But for the past 5 years, thousands of Russian mercenaries have been fighting on behalf of several African governments, including in Central African Republic, Mali, and Mozambique. The United Nations says Moscow's Wagner Group has committed gross human rights violations, including mass killings, torture, and rape in Africa. If a U.S. bill designed to punish Russian companies involved in harmful activities in Africa becomes law, security analysts say Washington would target Wagner and Africans associated with it. South African government sources told VOA that Ramaphosa, along with the African Union, wants Wagner to leave the continent. Monier says the South African leaders also likely to encourage more American investment in his country, especially in energy, infrastructure, and health. Then there's climate change. Monier says both countries share a big responsibility here because their industries are among the biggest emitters of harmful greenhouse gases in the world.
I think South Africa, United States, and quite a number of other countries do indeed share a common position and the need to protect the environment. And South Africa would really engage the United States to ensure that South Africa and the entire continent can gradually deal with the issues of environment in a much more responsible way.
He's convinced the meeting will be very cordial because at the end of the day, much more brings South Africa and America together than sets them apart. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington. That's our show for tonight. On behalf of producer Nadia Taha and engineer John Dryden,